The New Testament reading this morning is from 1 Corinthians 12, verses 4 through 11. Now there are varieties of gifts, but the same Spirit. And there are varieties of service, but the same Lord. And there are varieties of working, but it's the same God who inspires them all in every one. To each is given the manifestation of the Spirit for the common good. To one is given through the Spirit the utterance of wisdom, and to another the utterance of knowledge according to the same Spirit, to another faith by the same Spirit, to another gifts of healing by the one Spirit, to another the working of miracles, to another prophecy, to another the ability to distinguish between spirits, to another various kinds of tongues, to another the interpretation of tongues. All these are inspired by one and the same Spirit, who apportions to each one individually as he wills. Years ago, when I was teaching, I took a year off trying to get pregnant. I didn't last the school year before I went back to work as a substitute teacher. I didn't know who I was without wearing a hat labeled teacher. It's not that I didn't have anything to do to fill my time, but I defined who I was by what I did for a living. Without that role, I felt worthless. I never forgot this identity crisis, so when I started thinking about retiring a few years ago, I had some trepidation. What was I going to do with my time? What would I do to feel worthwhile? Did I have to take on another role? Or could I learn to be a human being rather than a human doing? The first month of retirement, I felt like I was on vacation, and I floated happily along. Somewhere in the second month, Jeff and I sat down to dinner one night after he got home from work. "Guess what?" he exclaimed. "My work group at Intel is being sold off as an independent company." I had lots of questions. What kind of work will the company do? What will your role be? Where will it be located? What benefits are being offered? He babbled on excitedly, and when he'd wound down, asked, "And what did you do today?" "Oh, I looked for a new light bulb for the dryer." I'd had to go to two appliance parts stores, and then when I got home, discovered the one I bought didn't fit, and I was going to have to go back the next day. But before I could get to that part of my story, he interrupted me with, "Well, what I would do is march back into that store and tell them..." I regrouped. I also called Waste Connections and changed our service to bi-weekly. It will save us a dollar. My contribution to the new retirement budget. "Will the pickup week be the same as the yard recycling?" "No," I said. "They just picked up on Monday, so I had them wait 2 weeks, which means it won't line up with the yard recycling. Would you like me to change it?" "Yes, if you wouldn't mind." Well, I'd spent 10 minutes on hold to make the change, and I did mind. Plus, it felt like the only two things I'd done all day, insignificant as they were wrong. I was no longer floating happily along. I began to notice that when I met someone new, especially someone younger than I am, the first question they asked after exchanging names was, "Oh, and what do you do?" And the answer, "I'm retired," brought the conversation to a quick end. I figured it would be different with people my own age or older, so I looked forward to going to our first elder hostel or Rhodes Scholar program. Sure enough, the standard question wasn't, "What do you do?" It was, "What did you do?" As though the only value to my life was what I used to do. Lenten season arrived, and I began journaling my way through a daily set of spiritual questions. One day, the question was, "Will you believe in your own giftedness?" If I was no longer what I used to do for a living, what were the gifts I still had? Fresh in my mind was the book I had just read called Quiet. It's about being an introvert in a world run by groupthink and social media. The author writes, "Introversion is now a second-class personality trait, somewhere between a disappointment and a pathology." Introverts living under the extrovert ideal are discounted because of a trait that goes to the core of who they are. This book lays out the gifts that introverts bring to the world, and it affirmed to me who I am at my introverted core, a good listener, intuitive, empathetic. I observe what's going on in and around me and reflect on it. I can express those observations in a way that makes other people stop and think. These qualities are all a part of who I am as a human being. That new appreciation for my own temperament led me to think more about other gifts I had that had helped me bring good things to fruition in my work life, my ability to bring consensus, stay calm, be organized, tackle difficult things, support others. These were all things I took with me as I retired. Are these things part of a life of being, or do I need to figure out something new to do with them? A couple years before retiring, I trained to be a spiritual director. At one point, we were assigned to do a spiritual exercise. We were to spend 2 weeks saying the mantra, "I am a spiritual woman," or "I am a spiritual man," a number of times a day. From some of my journal excerpts, here's what happened. October 7th. "I'm a spiritual woman." Yeah, right. "What gives me the right to claim that? I don't feel very spiritual. What does being spiritual look like anyway? Does that mean I need to be lighting incense and chanting all day?" October 9th. "I'm a spiritual woman. I'm not comfortable with saying this. It seems like if I'm spiritual, it means I have to be perfect or really holy, and I'm no better than anyone else. It seems presumptuous of me." October 11th. "I'm a spiritual woman. This makes me squirm. I feel too lowly, too undeserving, too flawed to be able to say this. I am not worthy." October 13th. "I'm a spiritual woman. I know I have to let go of judging myself in order to not judge others, but I've been trying to do that for years with little success. This is hopeless." October 15th. "I'm a spiritual woman. Can I let go of the fear of being too sanctimonious or too undeserving and just celebrate myself as a living expression of divine presence? What would it feel like to claim and honor that without judgment? Are there any signs of spirit moving within me? I am not sure." October 17th. "I am a spiritual woman." Each time I said this to myself yesterday, I just thought, "I am." I'd wait for the little dark voice to argue with me, but I just felt peaceful. October 19th. "I am a spiritual woman." This morning when I said it, I smiled. Again, no dark voice muttered objections. After work, I went to the fitness center for a workout. There was a very heavy-set man there whom I've seen before, about 75, very sober and methodical about his workout. We were gathering our coats to leave at the same time. I almost said something chit-chatty to him and wondered if that's what a spiritual woman would do. I settled for "excuse me" as I reached for my coat. He looked at me, smiled broadly, and said in very broken English, "God's blessings be upon you." What an affirmation from God. October 21st. "I am a spiritual woman. No better than anyone else, because we're all spiritual creatures. No less than anyone else, because none of us are perfect. I am a spiritual being. This is the core of who I am, deeper than my temperament even. I also have some gifts I've been given. So now what? I went to a week-long silent retreat, struggling with my next steps. I told the retreat director where I was stuck. He said, a call comes out of your gifts, there are three stages in life. Number one, learning or getting an education. Number two, taking that education and doing what you do well with it. And three, standing in the presence of the divine and serving. In the third stage, you get to do only the things you do well. But they also need to be things that serve God and feed you at the same time. The third stage is a blend of doing and being. If you're only being, then you might as well be a contemplative in a convent somewhere. You also need to be doing. I figured my husband Jeff wouldn't go for the convent idea anyway, so I had to keep working on finding that blend of being and doing. When I got back from the retreat, I worked with a spiritual director. A spiritual director is kind of like a soul coach, someone who walks along with you on your spiritual journey and helps you discover or develop or deepen a closer relationship to the divine. She urged, experiment with different things for the fun of it. You don't have to have your future all figured out right away. Keep being present to whatever is. After 40 years of a daily list of tasks to do or problems to solve, I'm just supposed to be present to what is, I whined. She smiled. Waiting for the new to manifest itself isn't satisfying, but the new will come. I began experimenting. I developed a class on the Desert Mothers and offered it here at church. The next fall, I started two small groups I called Seeking God Together groups, which will start up again this fall for the third year running. I said yes to several opportunities to be the celebrant at memorial services, and this summer a wedding. To feed myself, I study, meditate, attend workshops, and spend time coming alongside others in their lives, a kind of ministry of presence. Jeff asks me a different question at the dinner table each night. Instead of, "What did you do today?" he asks, "What did you notice today?" I get a chance to talk about my inner process, and it affirms my introverted self. And when I meet new people who ask me what I do, I say things like, "I facilitate small groups. I freelance. I consult. I tutor. I'm a soul coach." I avoid the use of the word spiritual. The conversation lasts longer that way. So do I have this retirement gig all figured out? No. I hear two voices in my head, one positive and supportive, the other dark and negative. The positive one seeks to let in others' encouraging comments, notice answers to prayer, explore how to be, and discover how to use my skills in this new realm. The dark voice does its best to cast doubt, point out insecurities, cause indecision, and list criticisms. Sometimes when I hear those negative things, the positive voice is able to say, "Shut up, I'm not listening to you. I know I'm not perfect. I'm being as faithful to my call as I know how to be, and that's enough." The negative voice is loudest and shrillest when I'm most in touch with who I am. It tries its hardest to knock me off my game. It wants me to be less authentic. But the negative voice is an affirmation of being. It reminds me I need to be true to who I am. In 1 Corinthians 4, Paul points out each person is given gifts of the Spirit for the common good. There are lots of gifts, lots of ways to serve, lots of varieties of work, all inspired by the same God. We all benefit by the uniqueness of each other's gifts. Look at how this worked in Exodus 3. God says to Moses, "I need you to bring the Israelites out of Egypt for me. Don't worry, I'll be with you." Moses balks and says, "I'm not who you want. I'm no public speaker." God says, "Who made your mouth? Isn't it me, God? So go, I'll be your mouth and teach you what you should say." Moses remains unconvinced. So God says, "Then we'll get your brother Aaron who speaks well. I'll put words in your mouth to talk Aaron into doing it, and I'll put words into Aaron's mouth when he speaks to my people. I'll also give you this rod and help you do signs with it that will help convince everyone. God used the gifts of Moses' leadership and Aaron's speaking ability for the common good to free the Israelites. God, Moses, and Aaron were in partnership with each other. When I look back over my post-retirement journey, what I see is that I am also in partnership with the divine. Just as God worked with Moses and Aaron to use their respective gifts, God works with me. I bring my temperament and the gifts I've been given to the relationship. And when she calls, I try to say yes. For her part, God puts needs or situations or people in my path, or surprises me with new opportunities or challenges. Together, we co-create my life for the benefit of others, the common good. As a spiritual being, I am part of God, the great I am, and God is part of who I am. What we are together is like what happens when you take a couple different colored pieces of Play-Doh and mush them together into a ball. You end up seeing swirls of the two original colors, plus streaks of a new one. It's a uniquely beautiful combination. Each one of you has a divine partnership with God. What will you and God create together for the common good of all? Amen.